Hello, everyone.
I'm Robbie Dorman, and this is The Serial Fanaticist, the podcast for fans of everything.
Welcome. Today, I'm joined by Megan Danek to continue our exploration of Frasier. We are discussing episodes 13 through 18 this week of the first season, and these episodes contain some very high highs and some low lows, with some of the messiest episodes yet, and then two of the best of season one. We talk about how Frasier's ex-wife is Darth Vader, how Niles living in a gothic mansion makes the most sense, and how Daphne's psychic headaches are actually warnings about shifts in the status quo. This was fun. As always, on to the discussion! Hello everyone, I'm here once again with Megan Danek to talk about Frasier. Megan, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you, Robbie?
I'm all right. Frasier's a good fun show. Frasier's a fun. It's a good fun show. It's a nice break from less fun shows and less fun things.
Sad shows.
Or sad things, scary things, bad things even. Good things are better than bad things.
Yes. Okay. Well, I mean, you know, yeah.
I'll take a good thing over a bad thing. Sight unseen.
Good and bad can be, you know, viewed through a lens. One person's good might be another person's bad.
I think we are the universal arbiters of good and bad, so we decide.
Well, in that case, done.
All right. We are going to be talking about our next six episodes of Frasier. This is like the three-quarter mark, basically, of season one, which is Guess Who's Coming to Breakfast, Can't Buy Me Love, Can't Tell a Crook by Its Cover, The Show Where Love Comes Back, A Midwinter Night's Dream, and The Whimper is the final of those episodes. Get us up to episode 18 of season one. Still fun. Still having a good time.
Yeah, it's opening up a little bit.
There's a little bit, I don't know, they are, I think you can see, overall, you can see a lot of similar themes throughout this season so far, and you can see them, I don't know, expanding on the core cast members a little bit, giving them people other than Frasier time, and also focusing in on, like, kind of hitting Frasier with a lot of different tenets on the same kind of themes. Like in this, I think in our last episodes, we did take them roughly in order, so we can just do that again because that's easy, unless we want to diverge, because we can do that whenever we want.
That's right, because we are the arbiters of.
Yeah, we're the arbiters. We're the characters from Halo, a video game series. He was an alien, part of the Covenant.
I'm watching references fly by my.
Halo's story is not why you're playing Halo. Guess Who's Coming to Breakfast is episode 13, and it is another, and there's a couple of them in here with Frasier and professionalism, and Frasier in ethics again, professional ethics.
Well, this time it's also just in personal, putting some family business on the radio without getting permission to do so. And it backfiring spectacularly.
Yeah. I have the little, I don't know if these are the official synopsis of these things on FraserOnline.co.uk, the episode guide, which is a nice reminder. I mean, but it does give a nice little synopsis. But yeah, he airs his father's sinful, dirty, sinful business on the radio. and Martin is a little upset about that. And it does, it connects those things. It connects that ethical thing that we've seen a couple times already with the kind of questions about his bringing his, I don't know, bringing his psychoanalysis to his family and then, you know, telling the whole world that his dad had sex with some lady.
Which I think isn't that a breach of ethics? I mean, I would assume that if you're a psychiatrist, you would not be treating members of your own family. Like, I feel like that would be a problem.
As far as I know, I am not a doctor, but as far as I know is that psychologists and psychiatrists are discouraged strongly from treating their own family members because the whole point of them is to be impartial, to be a true third party. And if you're talking to your family, then you're not, obviously, you know, you know,
not
too much.
He is, quote, yeah. Well, not that he is treating Martin really, but
no,
but
he's,
you know,
using him.
He is.
Which
it's interesting. Go ahead.
No.
I was just going to say, it's interesting that when he does mention him, he mentions that, you know, it's not the first time he's talked about his personal life on the radio, which I was like, huh, I wonder what, you know, what else he has chosen to share as the good doctor. Probably not something so private as that. That's not really his business, other than the fact that he does live with his dad, which is, oof, what an awkward breakfast.
Yeah,
just what an awkward exchange. I mean,
they really it's. I don't know. This might have been of this batch. Might have been my least favorite. Not that it's bad by any means. It is. It tips over. That awkwardness kind of tips it past my realm of comfort. Past my, like, oh, this is funny, and now I'm like, I don't feel good. I don't like any of this. I don't want. And I think there's not much ambiguity here about if Frasier did a bad thing.
Right.
Frasier did a bad thing. You know, that's it was kind of open and shut to me. I'm like, oh, he did a bad thing. He probably, that was bad. And then, like, and this weird. And then his mea culpa is even stranger to me.
With the, what do you call it? Moon River playing in the background when he's apologizing to poor, what's her name?
Elaine.
Was it Elaine?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
This poor lady.
This poor lady. Like, it's one, I mean, it doesn't make it better, but it would be one thing if it's your family and, you know, you have to deal with the fallout of that. But then this poor woman who, you know, his dad has said, oh yeah, all her friends listen to your show and you're very popular and da 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 da, and it's like, oh well, okay, let's talk about your sex life on the radio,
let's do it more. The way to fix this is to do it more. And I don't know, it's a fine, it feels a little too married with children to me. The ending,
yeah,
where they turn it into like a show of Ron, like, hey, look at the, and like it's parading like his Martin and Elaine like making out in an elevator,
yeah,
at the end in front of all those old people who are,
yeah, which was very strange too. Like, why would you? Who are these people? Do you have anything better to be doing than
obviously not. I don't know. It's it's not like it's a, and like, it's not like there is a, there's no shades of gray to this to me. You know, it is, Frasier should have done this. He learns his lesson, and that ends with some older people making out, even though they're not that much older than. That's the other thing in this is, like, they constantly are selling me, like, yeah, Martin's, like, a different generation, and so, he's, like, he's their father. But I don't think the actors are that much different in age, right?
No, I think they're definitely not that much different. I think very much not that different in age. But even so, I mean, like, obviously, you know, he's, what, in his, supposed to be in his 60s. Frasier, as established, is in his 40s. You know, they're really not that far apart. Although, I mean, you know, I don't know at what point talking about like sex or your own sex life with a parent would become comfortable. I have not reached that point.
No thanks.
So exactly, which is what makes, you know, this an interesting episode. It's sort of a hey, we live together. This is gonna happen. Like, this is going to be happening. This is something that we need to kind of, you know, get used to. And it does raise a good question. It's like, yeah, she stayed for breakfast, and it's like, this is your home. She should be able to do that. It's like, but also, I don't know. The whole thing was just very like,
yeah, it's very awkwardy, all very cringy, and which is a word I generally don't like using, but I think it actually applies in this case. Plus, the thing that's most interesting to me in this would be the generational differences. Like, that's these, he like, Martin starts to push that. He's like, yeah, back in my day, you know, we don't parade this stuff around. Elaine, she's embarrassed because blah, blah, blah. Like, if they kept going in that direction, I think that'd be very interesting and show.
Oh, you're skipping the best part of that line. That was my favorite part where he's like, sex is between you and the person you're doing it to.
Which, again, like, that definitely feels right about, like,
yeah.
That's a very, like, what's the boomer? Hey, he's a boomer, right? You would call Martin a boomer. That's very much was,
Wait a minute. Was he a boomer or was he like a greatest generation guy?
I mean.
He wasn't in World War II. He's probably in what, Korea?
I guess so. So maybe he's in between kind of, but I thought Korean was still would be a, is that greatest, is like that's, is there a generation between those two that we just don't categorize? Is there like a generation, you know,
probably
like V or something that was supposed
we'll
to.
We'll figure. There's probably, I mean, it's whatever people want to make up to sell to other people.
Right.
But like, you know, I think, so Frasier's in, it's the 90s, Frasier's in his 40s. That means he would have been born in the
50s. Right.
Which means Martin isn't quite boomer because that's like young people, hippies in the 60s, I believe. Right. So he's on the cusp of that. I feel like they're still kind of more greatest generation, old-fashioned values, you know, potentially old enough to have been alive when World War II was happening, right? Like, I don't know. It's neither here nor there, but it does resonate that he would have different attitudes just about sex than his, you know.
His son. I mean, it's not really the focal point of the episode, really, which, and I think that's kind of what I'm like, there's not, I don't really know what is the focal point of the episode. Like, what is this episode about? I'm like, Frasier, don't be a jerk on your radio show.
Yeah. Don't talk about the people in your life on your radio show. I think it's interesting. There are a couple things I marked down that are separate from the plot. Well, I guess not separate, but part of the plot, but one of them is that this is the first time we meet Noel.
Noel with goes on the date with Roz.
Yeah, who is Noel the nerd, basically the
I like
Star
Noel.
Trek loving. Yeah, he though to me, and he's, you know, kind of comes back throughout and is developed a little bit more. But that was such, that first like appearance was just kind of like a one-off, you know, kind of caricature, which it was like, okay, like, and I frankly had a very hard time believing that Roz would agree to go out on a date with him to begin with, let alone twice essentially, but just because of her, I don't know, it didn't ring true for me. But the other thing that I noted about this episode, I feel like it's the first time we've really got to see David Hyde Pierce, is a very good physical comedian.
Yes.
I mean, he is great at it. And there's been hints of that, but like the scene that was really funny to me was when he's in the kitchen with Daphne and she's talking about, you know, like strength, and he's like trying to push himself up onto the counter and I don't know. It was just like the sequence, and it was very, very funny. And I am always pleased to see a David Hyde Pierce, you know, physical comedy moment happen on this show.
He's very good at it. And I mean, the whole cast is like, they have very good timing and they are able to mix. I think that's another thing I'm coming to appreciate with the show, is the fact that I'd be able to mix such like mix very higher forms of comedy, you might say, with, you know, physical slapstick kind of stuff. And you do both at the same time and mix in, you know, a lot of good character and emotionally driven humor. And that's really what I want out of a comedy. You know, I want things to rhyme, as George Lucas would say.
Yeah.
Speaking
of arbiters, arbiters of, well, anyway. I don't need a legion of people coming after me.
No one cares about George Lucas anymore. Now they hate Disney. It's totally different.
Oh, well.
Now they love George Lucas. I mean, but they don't love him, but they love him. Don't ask Star Wars fans how they feel. They don't understand. This is going to be two episodes. I think my last episode I just recorded had a lot of talk about how Star Wars fans don't know what they want. Can't Barbie Love. There's auctions. Bachelor auctions. This is another episode that feels... I like it, but it also feels a little like it's unsure of what it is. It's weird because it kind of gives... I like when the episode basically begins with you're like, oh, if Frasier's going to be in a bachelor auction. I'm like, all right, I can see where this is going. Someone's going to bid on him and win, and they're going to have interesting, fun times together, and you're going to get surprised by who the person is and how they appear versus how they really are. And that's kind of what happens, but it's not by any means that, like, the supermodel, like, this, right off the bat, why is that lady bidding on Frasier?
It's for charity.
Is that the reason? Is that what we're going for? A bachelor auction.
Well, look at the other merchandise. I mean, it was what, a football player who apparently Roz went like to the mattresses for, so he's off the table. And then you have Bulldog, which, well, poor Bulldog.
Look at those buns.
And it didn't appear like there was that much else on the buffet, so to speak,
to go for.
I mean, he was doing his dad a favor, so they must have been at least a little bit desperate to get some more eligible.
I think I'm going to have to deal with as we go on. One, I just cannot see Frasier as like a sexual dynamo. Like, I just don't. He's like everything about him is like this foppish upper class radio psychiatrist, and then suddenly there's a woman around and he's like, ah! I'm like, all right. Like, Niles is like, his portrayal of like of his sexuality and his is like 100% legitimate and easily buyable.
Yeah.
And in every other way, the show is like, yeah, Frasier and Niles are actually very similar to each other. And yet, when Frasier has to deal with sex or attractive women, he's suddenly like this competent, sexy, even attractive man. And I'm like, I mean, Kelsey Grammer is not unattractive, but I can't imagine a world where a radio personality is a big deal.
Well, you mean, I don't know, Howard Stern? I can see it. Again, we're in a pre-internet zone. Options are limited.
Options are limited.
or at least a little more limited than they are now.
I mean, there's, I guess I could see it where, you know, like, there are famous podcast hosts right now, and Howard Stern still is relevant. There are still relevant radio and podcast personalities. It just feels, it doesn't really matter, because the model part of it largely doesn't matter until the very end. Again, like, she shows up, shows like, and Frasier himself is like, oh, it was you. I was expecting an average looking woman, and now I got a model, so I'm excited and I'm going to go to the full effort. And then she dumps her kid on him. And
which is weird. Like, that is very weird. Like, why not just cancel the date, you know? I mean, he kind of, like, at the end, it's sort of like, supposedly he's getting this comeuppance because he believed her twerpy daughter instead of, like, you know, assuming that she's lying and whatever. But at the end of the day, why would you, like, leave your child with I mean, Renata has a good point. Why would you just leave your daughter with, like, a dude that you don't know at all? Like, on the radio or not? Like, I'm seeing how some crazy, like, situations could happen.
I don't know. It's like, when Christina is the name of the model, when she is at the end, she's like, oh yeah, my daughter just lied and lied and lied, and you believed her, and you don't have a foot to stand on, Christina. All right, bid on this special thing, and then you're flaking out at the last second. You gotta, oh, I have to go do work or something. Well, you didn't buy a babysitter. You bought a, it was a bachelor auction. Like, and what, and that girl, the teenage girl actress.
Yeah.
No, thank you.
No, thank you. She was very, the look she had was very reminiscent of a 11-year-old Megan, I will tell you. Like, large,
it's
plaid
not...
shirt and the poor attitude.
It's nothing about the writing or the design of the character. It's her acting, I think, is just a little...
much.
A little, it's not enough, frankly. It kind of was in the middle somewhere, and it was a little muddy. If you're going to be like a snotty, teenage girl full attitude, totally buy that. And especially in that circumstance, by God. But, you know, either she's like reserved and shy and quiet, or she's full of snot and anger and hate. And instead, she has some attitude. I'd like her to be a little meaner to Fraser, frankly.
Yeah.
Like, that's where I wanted that. I wanted more of her just being mean to him, and he can't do anything because she's a little teenage girl.
It was pretty funny. Like, she was, you know, saying, like, ugh, at the end, you've got to get out more. Like, he's like, we had a nice time. And she's like, no, we didn't. What are you talking about?
We did not have a good time. This was not fun for anyone.
No.
But I don't know. Ed Fraser using the her mannerisms on the phone. That is good. Frankly, the stuff I like in this episode more was Bulldog and Daphne on their date.
Yes. I felt like they would hit it off somewhat, you know.
I mean, it's nice. I don't know, like, Daphne's character is, it feels tenuous. Like, it feels like it could be anything. Like, it feels like Daphne is this, you know, this oddball who, at most times, is a fairly, like, neutral kind of working-class character, much like Martin is. But then other times, suddenly, she shifts into, like, full-on, hey, I have psychic headaches, or I am a rousing drunk with Bulldog for some reason. Like,
She's drowning the pain.
I like having someone out-Bulldog. That's good. That's fun. That's a fun thing. I think that's my favorite part of this, little subplot is... her being louder and more obnoxious than Bulldog is. And Bulldog just like, he finally is speechless.
Which is, you know, something.
Something. And then he gets, I guess, beaten and left at a stadium. I don't.
Yeah.
they don't really, we don't ever see what happens to Bulldog after that. He just is suddenly gone from this limousine, and then they're in the limo later. Right? So, sorry, Bulldog.
The final scene where they're enjoying with Eddie sticking his little head out the window, and the final, like, cut scenes were pretty good this
Yeah, they
around.
Really were. I actually want to, there's one in particular we're going to talk about a lot, and I'm going to leave it suspenseful. We have four episodes left. So, anything else for Can't Buy Me Love? I don't have anything else.
I think we're good to move on. Okay.
Yeah, and the next one is Can't Tell a Crypt by Its Cover, which is a weird episode.
This one felt all over the place. Like, it felt like there were three different episodes happening in this episode. Like, very beginning, you know, the setup, it's like at the radio station where Roz is talking about, it's pointed out to Roz that she got swindled on the street. And then, you know, there's this whole kind of like... I don't know, Agatha Christie poker game or whatever, where Martin's like, I'm going to invite someone who has a record and see if you can guess. And there's like this whole, you know, reveal with that. But then there's this whole third act of, well, Daphne's going out with him, so let's go to the bar and try to, quote unquote, save her from this.
And then it does. That's not the plot either. It's not That's also not what happened. Like, that is also not the concern, because by the time they get there, Jimmy's gone. And you're like
he doesn't show up ever again.
And then they are idiots, and she has to play a bull game, which she doesn't even win. So then they just run away. It doesn't even make any, like, any one of those things could be a plot. And they kind of just go like, okay, well, a third of it, we're just going to make a third of it a plot. Like this, of everything we've seen in this first season so far, this feels so much like a first season episode of a sitcom.
Yeah.
Where it's just like, characters doing things. We don't know what they do yet. Like, yeah, there's, I don't understand Martin in this episode whatsoever, in that he is friends with a snitch.
Yeah, like, and then afterward, how he's like, oh no, you know, you can't date him. It's like, well, he was fine to, like, invite, like, to your house, but, like, you don't, but oh no, it's a bridge too far if Daphne goes to dinner with him or something. It's filled, like, wait, what?
Filled with expensive things.
Yeah, like, everything. Totally, like, and he does steal, like, his, in jest, you know.
I just stole your wallet.
Yeah. Like, hey, look at that. I don't know. It's so weird. And I love, though, I do rather enjoy that Daphne is a secret pool shark. Like, it's like, yeah, there's nothing to do in Manchester, which I do call a little bit of crap on. I mean, is like, there was a whole, like, very big music scene in Manchester that happened when Daphne probably would have been still living there, but whatever, that's fine. But apparently she spent all her days at the pool hall.
But wasn't she also wasn't she also in a television show?
Yeah, she's had a very storied.
That's what I mean when I like, it seems like her backstory is like, her backstory is as tenuous as Maris's, it seems like. Just every day they add things into Daphne's, like, backstory. Yeah, she was an actress. Oh, also, she's a pool shark. And also, she's psychic. And also, just keeps... And she can cook and clean. And she's... All these things just keep throwing in... I mean, not that I mind it, really. Because that she is... The way Daphne is played and portrayed, she's, like, this weird oddball that you're not... You're never surprised that she is suddenly talented in a new way. You're just surprised because she's never mentioned it before.
Yeah.
But she plays pool and they have to run. And like, they didn't know how to end it on a joke.
So they just like, da 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 da, get out of here.
I think so. I don't know. What was the little stinger for this episode? I forget.
Let me think.
Because I don't remember.
I don't know. Was this... Oh, well, was this the one where she was giving the dog the bath?
Don't yes. Say, oh, okay.
Yeah, was the one where the dog was supposed to get a bath and, like...
Wouldn't.
And they're, you know, like, at the very end. That I think that's also what made it a little bit off, is because it, like, circled back to a conversation... A thing that happened way earlier in the episode that had nothing to do with all of this other plot that Daphne was very much a part of. No, we're going to go back to talking about how she was going to wash the dog and has to bribe Eddie and then just kind of falls over trying to catch him. It was kind of dumb, like not on the level of some of the other ones, which I know we will talk about. But to me, it was just even more like, this has nothing to do with... What is happening in this episode? Like, everything is just like, it's almost like they did an exquisite corpse thing. Like, they just, like, you know, wrote some of the plot and then folded the paper and then handed it off to another writer. And we're like, oh, I don't know. Go.
I would not be surprised. Like, I mean, the way sitcoms are written, you know, I'm sure that there's influence and they were like, oh, we have a lot of jokes and we have like this scene and we have this scene, what are we gonna do with them? So Daphne's gonna date Jimmy at a pool. We have a pool hall set. What do we do with that? There's one of the canceled shows got a pool hall set that never got used. We need to use it before they destroy it. I don't know. I like the bartender because he's better at reading people than Fraser is.
Yeah.
That's
he had him squared away in but an instant.
That's my final thoughts. Fine. And then, okay, so here, we're getting to the real story, frankly, of these six episodes is the two next episodes. Like,
yeah.
Everything else is, whatever. These two are, like, the meat. These things are, like, hefty. And I teased it at the end of our last episode, but the show where Lilith comes back, like, they didn't even bother, like, having some, like, funny, punny name or something. They're just like, yeah, Lilith's in this one. There you go.
It's like, you knew it was coming, and here it is.
And it's very good.
It is. It is.
I don't remember Lilith from Cheers, so this is brand new to me.
I remember her from Cheers, although I know we've talked about it. I didn't really watch a lot of that show. Like, it was on a lot in our house, but not that I really paid attention to. I am a BB Newirth fan. She was in the 90s, probably around the same time as this appearance, most likely. Maybe. I don't know. I'll have to track down a year. She was in, like, the big Broadway revival of Chicago. She's a Broadway, like, star. She's very much a dancer, a singer, you know, has this stage presence. And I find her delightful. So I'm always pleased to see her in anything. But I love the character of Lilith because she's so unapologetically not just so herself. She's not like some other, I don't know. She's very different. She's very cold and, you know, not like, I'm struggling to think of a character that's kind of presented in the same way she is, which is she is not likable.
I will give you a character.
Okay.
Darth Vader.
Darth Vader. Wow.
It's okay. So Frasier's apartment or a Star Destroyer. They're everyone on board, everyone in the apartment, just going about their business, doing their thing, relatively normal, right? And then Darth Vader walks in. Everyone's just like, they immediately look at him, they immediately respect him because they know he's dangerous, and immediately are like trying to act normal because they also want to be presentable towards this person, but there is a vein of underlying threat. And they immediately establish that when she shows up because Eddie immediately listens to her.
Yes. And Daphne's psychic headache.
I love her psychic headache. It is really stupid. Like, it's a dumb joke. Like, oh, suddenly, like, the whole, like, that whole vein of Daphne's actually psychic, sort of, and we're not really gonna talk about the fact that she has superpowers, oh, whatever. And then this whole episode, like, she has this headache that arrives as soon as Lilith gets there, and as soon as Lilith leaves, it's gone.
Yep, wheels up, and she's like, oh, I don't need this ice anymore.
I feel so much better. But she has a force. She has a, like, not an aura, if you will.
Yeah. She's very self-possessed. She is very, like, I mean, even the way she looks, the way she presents herself. I mean, she has this command. She's like 5 feet tall. She's got this commanding presence. I guess Darth Vader is a pretty apt analogy. She,
I believe,
shows a little bit more tenderness in the end.
I mean, think back to when Vader loses his helmet in Return of the Jedi, and you know, he's his old, sad, old, dying man self, and he's talking to Luke, and, you know, that's very tender. He throws the Emperor down into that pit, so he chooses the good.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Tender. There's something there.
Well, it's funny, too, because, you know, clearly she has to be bad enough that you understand why she and Frasier got divorced. I mean, she cheated on him. That was, you know, established as well. But I think there has to be like a degree of, you have to be able to accept it both ways. You have to be able to accept that he was once in love with her for some reason, but also, yeah, they're definitely not together anymore.
I mean, and I think the show handles that very well. I think it handles that kind of their co-parenting. And she actually, I mean, she's doing the more most of the parenting. I shouldn't say they're co-parenting. I think they are both okay with the arrangement, I should say, with the fact that she is in charge of Frederick most, but I think she is okay with that as well. But is it, did they ever establish what actually is the, like, the impetus for the divorce? Because it feels very much like she left him.
Well, I mean, he moved across the country. I don't know.
I don't know if that's ever... Yeah, I thought that... See, this is... Okay, I'll lay out my... From watching this episode, I'll lay out my understanding, and this is all just me context, gleaning from context. Because, I don't know, the fact that Frasier is the one that leaves the letter. I mean, even if it is before, it is prior to the divorce. It is in the run-up, I guess, in their probably, I don't know, year of misery before they actually get divorced. But he writes this letter, so obviously he wants to establish a connection. And I don't know, he leaves, you know, he flees to Seattle after they're divorced, I assume. I always assumed that she was the one who, I don't know how they filed for divorce, who did it, and they're okay with each other now, but we're seeing that, and it's still kind of raw, their feelings for each other. They don't know where they stand with each other. But you see immediately, this is no Cheers background information, but you see immediately, like, how they work together and why they would get married in the first place. Like, I think Frasier would appreciate her force of will and force of personality, because he also has the same thing at times.
Yeah, well, and I mean, she's obviously very intelligent, and she is beautiful. I don't remember her being as drawn out on Cheers, but I didn't watch enough Cheers to be able to say that for sure. I feel like when she and Frasier were on, it was just kind of a joke. It's like, here's Frasier, who used to date Diane, and his wife, who is like this ice queen.
Yeah,
you know?
The ice queen is like, yeah. So, I mean, I feel like that is, they use that as the joke first, but then they let her... the character breathe a little bit in the show, in this episode.
Yeah.
She is, you get to see that tenderness. You get to see them, I don't know, have a booty call, basically, and them eat eggs and then shouldn't have gotten eggs.
I did like how that played out. I thought that was very, you know, kind of like this release, because obviously he wakes up and it's like instant regret. Should not have done this. This was a mistake, you know? And I don't know. I don't think she felt like it was necessarily at first, but I mean, I think they resolved it well.
I mean, I think she's the one who reads the letter and realizes, oh, right. I did not understand when this letter was versus what this letter was. And when he comes and they end up sleeping together in the hotel room, which, what is her job again?
She's also a psychiatrist.
Oh God.
Yeah.
They probably said that and I just forgot.
In the beginning, when she calls in the call-in show.
Oh, right.
She's basically, she's kind of giving the,
which is very good. And I think that's also a very enjoyable part of this episode, is that she is just like unrelenting. Like, she's never necessarily mean to Frasier, but she is like just needling him. Every time, and needling Niles, which is even, I think, better.
And sounds like it was much deserved. I don't think I would have been able to sit through that crap either without laughing.
Your emotions at weddings are fine.
Sure they are, but it sounds like some very trite and creative to the point of funny vows were written. I mean, I've heard good touching vows, that sounds like. And just, well, we should talk too about, you know, we're hearing more about Maris as these episodes go on. I guess the next episode's really where that kind of...
Yeah, it culminates.
Culminates. But,
it's been in every episode. There's always, I think every episode literally has gone, where is Maris? And we get, oh, Maris is... blank. Maris is doing this. Maris can't come out today. The world is too much.
Yes. Maris is getting another restorative spa treatment because the world.
Which,
you know.
Totally understand that sometimes.
That's relatable. Yeah,
yes. Understand. But, totally understood, Maris. I'm on your same wavelength occasionally. But it's just another little. And I think this is just a contrast of. Another contrast of Niles and Frasier, where Frasier broke up with his wife. Niles is still with his. Niles and Maris are still married. And, you know, they mention Niles and Maris's wedding. And we see we see Frasier and Lilith kind of think about, oh, could we get back together? Oh, no. No, we couldn't. We got divorced right. for a reason. There's a reason we got divorced. And that morning after, Frasier kind of knows it immediately. And Lilith, I think, realizes, oh, they specifically mention, like, oh, we had some good times together. It wasn't all bad. And I think Lilith she talks about how lonely she was, and she sees Frasier moving on with his life.
Right.
Moving to a new town, getting a new job, becoming some degree of famous, and she's the same.
Yeah.
It's very understandable.
It is.
And they, both of them going, this is probably a bad idea. That's okay. We make mistakes, and then they move on, so to speak. Right. The gag with her purse in the door after the first visit is, you're talking about physical comedy, with David Hyde Pierce earlier. This is chef's kiss. Yes. It's just perfect. It's just, and that's the other thing about her, that Ice Queen persona, the Darth Vader, is the show is not also afraid to, everyone is vulnerable. You know, she is not an exception to everyone, like, being kind of a fool at times. She's like, I just want to leave here with my dignity. And the purse just slowly gets locked on the door and moves up. Oh, so good. All right. So Daphne, her psychic headache. This is my theory. All right. I am theory crafting Frasier now. Daphne is a medium of the status quo.
Huh. In all of the hilarity and shenanigans that occur, she is cutting to the quick of what actually is real about the situation.
Lilith arrives, and her psychic headache starts, and it is played as a laugh in all regards. Like, I'm not, this is just me being the kind of stupid idiot I am with the meta commentary on these shows. But Lilith is a disrupting factor, because if she truly does get back together with Frasier, what is this show?
Oh, that's true.
What is this show? It's different now. Lilith, what happens to Frasier? Does he stay in Seattle? Does Lilith move to Seattle? What happens? Frederick shows up. Now suddenly there's a kid in this cast. This is a very busy apartment. There'll be like seven people living in this apartment. It's a totally different, this is not what the show is. Like, that's not how sitcoms work. They don't add four new cast members halfway through the season.
And maybe that was the out in case the ratings weren't doing great.
they bring in Baby Newirth they have a permanent Frasier relationship instead of the various women who he see for like 3 minutes an episode and then vanish. But then Lilith leaves, and Daphne her headache is gone, because we have returned to the status quo.
Interesting. I'll take that theory.
I'm gonna pay attention. I'm gonna see if that bears out as we continue. Because how does Daphne react to show changing appearances?
Interesting.
Does she reject them? Is she an antiviral? I don't know. This episode's very good. It's very funny, and it is actually very, like, personable and very character driven, a lot of good emotional beats, I would say this and the next episode are the two probably battling for my favorite so far.
Yeah, the next one is pretty great,
which is A Midwinter Night's Dream.
Yes,
which so is finally confronting at least a first glance at finally an episode that is actually about Niall's crush on Daphne.
Yeah, and pretty much head on, you know, like, Frasier's like, hey, this is a problem. Like, do you not realize that this is a problem? You know, And which I admire, you know, there's a lot of will they, won't they couplings on TV shows and in other, you know, media. But this one, I think it does go on for a long time, but I think that they definitely come at it with their eyes open and say, yeah, we're aware that this is happening and something's got to give at some point because you are a married man and Daphne is living, you know, in Fraser and Martin's apartment. It's a situation that's not going to change, you know, unless something very drastic happens. And
the reveal that Niles and Maris live in this gothic mansion.
Oh, it's so great. Hashtag goals.
I was kind of dumbstruck for a moment. I'm like, wait a minute. All this time when they say, oh, Maris was trapped, like she couldn't leave her bedroom for some reason.
Maybe she was just lost.
I was like, oh, this is why. It's because she lives in a gigantic mansion that was built in probably like the 1870s. And they live with Phantom of the Opera probably, or Frankenstein's monster. He's hanging out somewhere. Like, yeah, all this makes way more sense because they're living in like, they're living in a Victorian romance novel where women suddenly just stop working because they're women. And that's where Maris is. I totally understand Maris now, I think. I think Maris belongs in Sense and Sensibility.
Yeah, the funny thing, and I think it's been alluded to earlier in this season that, you know, that Maris is the one with the money. Like,
mm-hmm.
When Niles married, and which is made clear in this episode, like he basically married into her fortune, and regardless of the fact that he's a psychiatrist and I'm sure doing fine for himself, you know, they're kind of on a different level even than Fraser, I would definitely say, right? Like
she's old money, you know, it feels like she is, like her, I think they allude to four generations this house has been in her family, which means that is old money. That means that they have some substantial windfall of wealth that is almost impossible to deplete unless you invested poorly for like a century, basically.
Yeah.
Which, you know, has happened.
Sure.
The old money is not still old money, but it kind of shines a light on the dynamics of their relationship a little bit more, a little bit better. I think Niles is always like even Lilith in that last episode. She made some joke about Niles' transcendent river of love or something like that.
Yes.
And it always has been very much like, oh, he is like this kind of effeminate, doting husband. Always taking care of her, always at her beck and call.
Mm-hmm.
And when you see their house and you see, oh, right, she's a rich person. Really, she's wealthy even. Not rich. Like, Fraser's rich. She's wealthy. She's another percentage higher, percentile higher on the wealth scale. You get that. You understand that immediately when you see this absolutely ridiculous house.
Yeah.
Which I love. Because I don't know. The moment when Daphne comes down wearing that ridiculous negligee or whatever the hell it is.
The only one that would fit her, of course.
I would just stay in your wet clothes. I would think and just sit by the fire, I think, is a better alternative, but whatever. And then suddenly, and he's playing the piano in that robe, and it is a ridiculous, unbelievable reveal, and it is played perfectly by everyone involved.
It's pretty amazing, and, you know, of course, it's like a dark and stormy night outside. Mm-hmm. I mean, everything is perfectly set for something to happen. But then ultimately, you know, it doesn't. And it's interesting because at this point, you know, you're wondering if, I mean, it's definitely occurred to Niles, but has it occurred to Daphne? And then when she's like laying on the floor, you know, she's talking about, I mean, she's being very like complimentary to him and saying, you know, I feel so comfortable around you. And it's very, you know, it feels like something might happen, but then it doesn't. And not in kind of like a Bob, you know, like shaking your head, coughing in the other direction kind of way. It's just like, it just organically kind of doesn't happen.
Well, the Glockenspiel rings.
Ah, the Glockenspiel. Yes.
Which is
the Glockenspiel.
All these episodes, and this one in particular, full of double entendres. And it's not like Frasier doesn't have them a lot, but like this, along with the show where Lilith comes back, plus Guess Who's Coming to Breakfast, whenever there's sex happening, oh my god, they are not shy about, oh, your Glockenspiel is working again. Yeah. And
I to back up the Guess Who's Coming to Breakfast, I mean, that was basically a Marx Brothers movie. I mean, it was you know, down to the bangers. Wait, mm-hmm. No, I mean, it was quite good. So yes, the Glockenspiel peels its spiel and rouses everyone. I don't know. I'm just going with it.
Ba-dum-tish.
Yeah. But, you know, rouses everyone. And then Frasier gets there and, you know, just in time, he thinks. And it's like, no, you know, nothing's going to happen. And
well, I mean, I think that says something, that they have it settled before he shows up.
Yeah.
He is not the reason. Unquote,
settled.
Well, yeah. You know, it feels like they have gone past the moment where they have reached the point where something would have happened between them and it doesn't. And they are, and then Niles has a kind of epiphany about his marriage, about Maris, and then Frasier shows up screaming in the rain.
Yes. And poor Marty.
Oh my god, yes. He leaves his wounded father to try and like use his what do you call it, his, what's the name, walker, to get through the rain to the back of this mansion. How did Frasier like jump the fence or something? I assume they have a fence.
I would think so. I don't know, but their father made some reference to like a shortcut. I don't know if he actually took him up on that, but it was pretty funny. It was just funny too. I really wanted to know. That was another one of the, I don't know, stingers, I guess, that I was like, I wonder what they're playing on the piano. What are they all, like, those three people, because Daphne was singing along too. What song are they all rocking out to on the piano so loud that they can't hear?
It's some Billy Joel.
A man.
Uptown Girl.
Bang. That's probably correct. That tracks. I don't know if Niles knows Uptown Girl. I don't know.
I think Billy Joel is a man of all the people.
Well, you know, he was a classical composer as well.
See? And so he can reach any collar, whatever color it is. He can reach any collar. Whatever color the collar, Billy Joel is there. The piano man, they call him.
It's his superpower.
I don't know. Everything about this episode, it's not easy, honestly. Like, this feels like a really difficult thing to do, to tease out, you know, this weird relationship that they've established so far while keeping, you know, Niles, like, I think part of it is that because Maris is off screen and stays off screen, it's a little easier of a plot to kind of deal with, because we don't really have Maris to, like, Maris is always, she is Godot. She's somewhere else.
She's in the ether somewhere. There's no face with the name. There's no humanity, you know,
mm-hmm.
connected to this person.
So it's easier to root for Niles and easier to empathize with Niles, even if he is like ridiculous or dumb.
Yeah.
You're just like, okay, I like you, Niles. What's going on? And I think that's we are Frasier kind of in this episode in a lot of ways. When him and Martin talking in the apartment, when Niles calls and say, "Oh yeah, Maris isn't coming, and Daphne is going to stay here because it's pouring out rain, it's not safe," and Frasier immediately hearing that Maris isn't there, we have to go.
yeah,
It's very good because it is, and he's showing genuine worry about his brother, and he wants his brother not to make a dumb decision.
Yeah, because it could have been a dumb decision. I think it's interesting because, I mean, again, it's not much of a spoiler to say that this relationship, you know, changes and continues and, you know, goes on and as the seasons go on. And I think, you know, it's interesting, I think, how your allegiance changes, because in this first season we discussed it's like Niles is still kind of being hatched and, you know, it on the face of it, it's like, if he cheated on his wife, it would just seem kind of shitty. But steadily, I think we're just, as we learn more about Maris and about this relationship, it's like, how have you stayed with her as long as you have? Like, is it just the baller house? I mean, is it the money? You know, that question comes up. Is it the lifestyle you are accustomed to? And kind of, you know, I think some people kind of gave it a little, I don't know, didn't like the fact that it did kind of go on as long as it did. But I think it kind of took a while to sort of start stacking the case that, you know, he's maybe not with the right person and maybe something else should happen. So it's interesting to see it just kind of starting out and finding its footing in season one.
Right. And I think that they started in the right place. Like, like to have this is the first episode that confronts it directly. It feels like it hit the tone right, hit the tenor right, and this is a comedy. You know, it's a sitcom. It's not gonna be. You can't go to this and expect rapid resolution of romantic plots. Like, I don't necessarily need that in this show. It only becomes a problem when it's not confront. Like, I think. I was like immediately, like in the past couple episodes, I was like, what's happening with Niles and Daphne? Like, he's a married man. They have to confront this at some point, right? And they do. And it's relatively early on in this first season. You know, it's at the halfway point or three quarters. And they hit it. And they're like, here, this is where you are. And, you know, we'll give you signposts along the way as we move through the seasons. And I'm fine with that. I don't know. I think back to a lot of shows that their central, like the central drama is the will they won't they thing.
Yeah.
And almost all the shows fall apart as soon as they decide. Like as soon as the shows decide they're not going to, or they are, and they're together. It kind of, a lot of times shows struggle with a change in focus with an underlying tension that kind of helps hold a show together. And then they pivot to, it's like Friends, you know, where every permutation of them that's possible have dated sometimes multiple times. And you're like, why is this who, what's going on?
A lot of people like it. A lot of people watch Friends. I didn't either. I will say I couldn't, I mean, I've seen some of the episodes in repeats and, you know, Team Phoebe always forever. Lisa Kudrow's she's just great. I mean, if there is a reason to watch that show, there is one reason to watch that show. There was one reason out of six to watch that show.
I'm totally cool with Joey.
Yeah.
I mean, he's an idiot, but he's at least that's what he is. You know, he's not.
Yeah.
He's just a meathead. He's better than him and Phoebe, and the rest are kind of sociopaths.
Yeah.
The problem is, I think my problem with, okay, here's the Friends divergence. I'm going to do it. Seinfeld confronted the fact that those four people are all monsters.
Yes.
Seinfeld was like, yeah, they're bad. They're bad people. It's okay. That's what the show is. But Friends never really felt like they confronted the fact that all these people are bad.
Yeah, I don't think Friends realized that all those people are bad. I don't think a lot of Friends viewers realize that all those people are bad. We watched, you know, continuing down this Friends diversion, we watched, like, they did the, I guess, Thanksgiving episodes are a thing for them in particular, because I guess, you know, Thursday night, whatever, must-see TV. We were watching a couple of them, just happened to be watching them this past Thanksgiving, and it was crystal clear, like, they weren't likable at all, again, with the exception of Phoebe. Like, just, and I know this was, again, a a slightly different time, right? This was, well, probably what, the mid-90s, I guess. It was probably on, started a little later than Frasier did. But, like, within this just, I think we watched maybe two episodes. It was like there were all these, like, kind of homophobic jokes and, like, just mean jokes. Like, they were just mean-spirited. And it's like, this isn't funny. Like, this is just kind of, who is this for? Clearly not for me.
Not for me.
I don't know.
I think that's the answer. Not for me. I don't know. I think A Midwinter's Night's Dream is my favorite episode so far. It is. It just has, and like, it is, I think it is in my, it is actually in my, like, maybe top 10 sitcom episodes ever. So, like, it is, it really does a great job of understanding the characters and giving them this, like, giving them a ridiculous setting to work, like, to work out their problems in with this, this mansion is just, I can't say enough about that, that set, that set is just, is perfect. The fireplace,
like the lush plants,
and
like the
velvet and everything. It's so
it
good.
It is everything. It is everything.
Our last episode is "And the Whimper Is," which I was like, "And the Whimper Is," and apparently, so this is about the awards, radio award show,
the
I guess
CBs,
which are a reoccurring thing. I've learned.
Yes.
Is that yes? Like yeah.
Yes, there. No, I mean there are a few CBs episodes, CBs centric episodes. Well, I'm not gonna say CBs centric. It's more like they. There are other things going on, but yes, this is the first
Is that a good thing?
Yeah, no, I remember them being a couple of them being funny. I mean, this is an annual award show, so every year that this show is on, I at least allude to it, I believe. My favorite part is the running joke about poor Niles getting stuck carrying drinks to people. Everybody thinks he's a waiter.
Niles looks exactly like a waiter. Exactly like a waiter.
This episode is not the best of the CB's one. It's kind of like, okay, you know, like, there are a couple things. Like, first of all, what Roz would not agree to go with Noel to this thing. This is, again, where we're hitting a point of disbelief.
Her original date left, and she didn't want to go alone.
Her original, like, super hunky date, like, I don't know.
Do they ever confront, like, is there ever a plot about Roz just not being alone, not liking being alone?
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
I mean, like, yeah. I understand that she likes to date a lot, and that's fine, but I mean, like, some, like, a deeper kind of emotional resonance about, oh, she's actually doesn't, she finds it uncomfortable not having dates.
She has, you know, actual relationships. There's a lot that goes on, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. It seems like her freewheeling ways, like this guy, I don't know. But the whole thing about, like, the buying gifts for the judges and, you know, going up against this poor sad sack who's been nominated.
Fletcher Gray. What does he do?
However long.
He's on the radio. What is he, just like a tar? Is it like he's like an NPR guy or what? What's going on?
I guess. I don't know. He seems beloved by people, but also, I don't know, just kind of has been there for a long time. His darling mom, who was...
I really like his
delightful.
Mom.
Yeah.
She's great.
Yeah.
Frankly, best part of the episode.
Yes.
Drinking her pink ladies.
Her pink ladies. That's right.
What's in a pink lady?
Good question. Let's find out. Because it looked... frankly, delicious.
Egg white, grenadine syrup, half and a half, and gin.
I'll take it. Garnish with a cherry.
Garnish with a cherry. So it's a gin and grenadine.
It's a cherry, gin.
With an egg white. I don't know. The egg white thing.
It's probably just to thicken it up, I think.
A raw egg white in my... I don't know if I want a raw egg white in my cocktail. Well, I'll try one. I'm going to go to a bar and order a pink lady at some point and see what they do to me. See if they have egg whites in the back.
See what they do to you.
Yeah. They'd be like, hey, here's a... We don't have those.
Probably to make foam on the top.
Probably. I mean, it's half aesthetic. Yeah. And this is another... This is them dipping their toe into the professional... ethics and fame thing again.
Uh-huh.
Along with the what was our last batch, the advertising deal episode. This is another one of what's her face shows up again. BB.
Yes.
BB shows up. BB shows up again. I don't think they give her enough in this. I feel like she's just there to remind us that she exists. I like her still.
Yes. Yeah. She's not definitely not the focal point. She's just there because it's like, it's what you do, mm-hmm. you know?
She's reminding us, remember fame, celebrity, yeah. awards. And this is the other thing. I think this is the thing that I tie back to my complaints about radio celebrity is like, I can't name anyone, I listen to podcasts. I am a podcaster, obviously. I still, I pay zero attention to podcast awards, just like I pay zero attention to radio awards. I just don't care. Are there people who are not in the industry who care about this?
Probably not, but I don't know that that was the point of it. I mean, they were all everybody who was there was radio. They were all radio people, you know? And I feel like, I mean, they give out librarian awards. Nobody cares about that except library workers, you know.
I know it's just supposed to be about I think my larger complaint is they don't actually get to it. Feels like this would be about Frasier wanting to be recognized for doing good work, and I think they kind of Fletcher Gray is that's quite a name. Fletcher Gray at the end is like, all you have to do, you don't even if you lose, all you have to know is that you did a good job. You look back at a body of work, which is feels very much like a that kind of dude thing to say.
Yeah.
Look back at this body of work and feel like you've done a good job. And they have Niles disrespect Frasier because of that he's a radio host now and not an actual doctor.
Yeah.
It's, maybe get a little bit into that a little bit more. Instead of, because they pursued them buying gifts. Like, that was the big conflict in this episode is, they bought gifts for the judges, and that's, Martin doesn't like that, thinks it's a bribe, which, I don't know, is that a bribe?
I mean...
Kind of.
Like, I don't know, I've never heard of a contest where that is, just what you do, but... I'm not involved in the Seattle radio scene, so, maybe it is. I don't know. It seems like it would be backwards. It seems like the CB organization, it made me think of, except in the reverse, how apparently if you're nominated for an Oscar, an Emmy or whatever, you can just go to they have these prize huts mm-hmm. where you basically can go. And it's not just a lovely parting gift. It's like, here's, several $1,000 worth of jewelry and electronics and this, that, and the other for free because you're wonderful.
I believe I saw a number a few years ago. It was $12,000 value.
I believe it.
In the swag bag that they would receive, which, sure, whatever.
I mean, to a point, it's sort of like this is in miniature, something like an Oscars or whatever, fill in the blank. Like, ultimately, it's a popularity contest with a certain group of people, right? And I think Frasier is equating it to I've here I mean, he's only been on the radio for a year. And it's like, I want to, look at all of this that I have achieved. It is time for me to be recognized for my important work. It's like, dude, you've only been on the radio for a year. And it's all a bunch of the same people that have been here for years. And then there's, this other dude who's not going to win it because he hasn't won it for years. So it's like...
Maybe Fletcher Grace is not good.
Maybe he's not. Maybe that's why he has never won the award.
Maybe everyone likes him. That's why they nominate him. But they don't think his show's good. So he never win. Maybe I haven't listened to Fletcher Gray's show. Maybe he's boring. He sounds boring. He looks boring. His mom is more exciting than him. And his mom is 90.
Yep. They should just have her do a show. They should give her a couple pink ladies and be like, all right, mama, here's the radio. Here's the microphone.
And who is the one who wins? I missed.
I don't think they were even there. Wasn't that the kicker? It was a tie for the other two people in the category. Amazing.
I don't know. It just ends with Frasier sneaking off with some girl and Roz being left to be sad alone with Fletcher Gray's mom.
Yeah.
Who
sneaks her drink, which is great.
Yeah, that is very good. That's very funny. But it kind of, again, loses a little bit of focus.
Yeah. Yeah. She's like super bummed. I mean, I feel like Roz has been in the radio game longer than Frasier has.
Yeah. I think, frankly, this should be a Roz episode, not just a Frasier. It shouldn't be a Frasier with Roz episode. I think if it was just a Roz episode, I think that would kind of focus it a little bit more and give us, I assume we're going to get a straight up Roz episode at some point.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And I think that would focus this episode because, yeah, she clearly has more to win because she's been in a radio person much longer than he has.
Yeah. I really liked the little hat tip, even though it was to set up a joke about, I don't know, a push-up bra or something. But I liked, like, after they'd been nominated, she stopped by Frasier's apartment. And it's like, you know, Daphne's like, I think, you know, it's great that you were nominated. And, you know, not many women do that in your industry. And, you know, kudos to you. And it was like, yeah, right on, you know. And that kind of made it seem like her wanting, like really wanting that award, like was kind of understandable. But then you've got Frasier with his, you know, carefully slicked back hair for the evening. He had a little bit of a look going on, you know. And, you know, it just seemed like, it's like, what kind of validation are you looking for, man? Like, is it because you're, you know, you are being ribbed by Niles that you're kind of taking this up a notch? Or, you know, I don't know.
Yeah, I just wanted more of that. I wanted more Niles. And I feel like that is the central driving point of Frasier wanting this fame, is because he's lost some of his respectability because he's not a genuine psychiatrist anymore. Now he's just a radio personality, so he can find it in a different way. You know, here is an award that proves that I am worthwhile, that this is worthwhile, what I've done, aside from all the money I make.
I also like that in this episode, unrelated to that, that they talk about how, you know, Daphne, you're like part of the family, Daphne. We don't think of you as just, you know, an employee, and then sit around and wait for her to
go get the door. go get the door.
Yeah. Like, there's still a hierarchy here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Despite your niceties.
Is there a certain point where Martin doesn't use a walker anymore?
I don't think so.
Never rehabilitates it completely. Just to get shot. He got shot, so it's done for. He's always going to be limping.
I believe so.
Okay.
Yeah.
I was just curious.
And I think that comes up as well, like in terms of his day to day kind of, you know, like the way his life has changed in many ways because of what happened to him. That will, you know, that will come to a head later, but.
Good.
Yeah.
It's a whole new world out there.
It is.
Of Frasier.
A whole new Seattle.
Mid-90s Seattle. The Sleepiverse, I believe, has been settled.
The Sleepiverse with Eric the Red's terrible band. And
was that already a thing in 1994? Like, grunt, like bad Seattle bands trying to get in on Nirvana thing?
Well, didn't also when... When Lilith called in onto the radio show, or I don't know if she referenced it later, she was like, well, I was hoping to hear you introduce the latest Pearl Jam tune, but, you know, I love their little just like sideways mentions of the fact that, you know, something monumental is happening in the city where they live.
I mean, that's the thing. They are in a different, might as well be in a different planet.
They're so out of it.
That their world is completely divorced from the grunt scene of the early and mid 90s. They are, and I think that's why I'm totally okay with them. I mean, Frasier's obtuse. He doesn't listen to rock music. He listens to Rachmaninoff music.
Yeah, I mean, it's true. It's true to them. Like of anyone on this show, you know, like Roz or Daphne might listen to, like, or be more aware of what is, you know, popular on the radio.
Mm-hmm.
That's not talk radio. But it's interesting to know that that's like happening in the background, and it's an interesting choice to like choose Seattle as the venue for this. I guess, what is it, 93, 94? So it's a little bit, not late. I mean, it's definitely still happening, but like, you know, definitely it has been established. It has, you know, grunge has been a thing for a little while. If my timeline's correct. I'm thinking my timeline's correct.
Start of 92 is when Smells Like Teen Spirit was
there we go.
A number one hit. So, I mean...
I feel like, I mean, Kurt Cobain died in, what, 94? So this is, you know, happening kind of concurrent to that happening, right? Like, that's about the time frame where we're at. It doesn't matter. I mean, again, this is... This is like,
we need to get all of this settled, please. This is very important.
Like, it's enough to me that they've got the snooty coffee shops, like,
right,
you
with
know,
the Eric,
with Eric giving them their half calf light foam, whatever.
What do they call that drink they both want?
I don't even know.
It's some insult to them. I can't remember the name of it. That's everything. That's all the episodes.
It's all the episodes we watched.
I don't know. I think as a whole, these six aren't as good, probably, maybe, as those other two. But they have the two. They have Lilith and they have the Gothic Mansion episode. I don't like those two. They're so good. They're so much better that I don't really care. Like, yeah, the other episodes are a little unfocused, I think. But those two episodes are like truly great, frankly. Like nine.
Yeah, they're season, if not series, best ofs.
So the rest, that's fine. It's fine. I got more. You got a lot of character modes. It's still funny, even when the show itself is like not sure what. Like that episode where they are having a mystery poker party and then they are going to a pool bar, I don't know what's happening. And then they're running for the live suit. It doesn't matter. It's still funny. It's just, you know, it's not the complete package, but that's okay. Our next episode will be the last six episodes of season one. We're wrapping up season one.
Yes, we are.
Mm-hmm.
Eager to see where it lands.
See how we go. See how it goes. Anything you want to mention? Anything you want to wrap up?
We'll leave it there.
Oh, okay. What would you like to plug, Megan?
I don't. Again, support your local library. That'll be my sign off.
Okay, that's pretty good. Yeah. It is. That's important. You should do that.
Yeah.
Megan, thank you for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
And for all you out there, we're listening. Thanks again to Megan for joining me. You can find me on Twitter at Robbie Dorman, and the show's website is SerialFanaticist.com. You can follow our Facebook page at Facebook.com/SerialFanaticist. If you like the show, give it a 5-star review. Tell your friends. Subscribe. You know the spiel. You listen to a lot of podcasts. They all say the same thing. But they really do help, and they certainly do help small podcasts like this one. And I do thank you for your help. Until next time, thanks for being a fan.